everyone. Welcome to episode 168 of Randalay Radio. This is Dylan joining you live on the evening of Sunday, April 21st. I am joined today by Ryan of Trades 10 Years Later Substack. Once again, Ryan, how you doing, man?
It's a bummer that we're doing this today instead of last week. I would have had all sorts of good baseball posts on my Substack I could talk about coming up, but tomorrow I'm publishing something on the NFL, so it's less exciting promotion.
Yeah, well, give us an clue us in, because maybe we'll still appreciate it.
I usually
like the NFL one.
We got Terrell Pryor being traded for a 7th round pick to the Seattle Seahawks, and then getting cut a few months later.
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah,
it's Terrell Pryor is a banger.
That guy started his
universe,
NFL
that's
career
a,
being
that's like
suspended.
A S-tier banger.
Yeah.
It was a supplemental draft guy, wasn't he?
Isn't
there one guy every 10 years?
He was drafted in the supplemental draft with the first overall pick of the draft, which took place in the 3rd round for some reason. I don't really get that. And then he was suspended for 5 games because in college he got money from a booster. And so the NFL suspended him 5 games to start his career. The world's changed a lot in the past 10 years, man.
Yeah. It is still wild, and I'm sorry we're starting on a football note, but this is just important to say out to the world. It's so crazy that, first of all, just based on the universe we live in, that the Reggie Bush thing still exists, where it's like Reggie Bush can't have a Heisman Trophy and a national championship or whatever it is that he earned, and we're actively paying players now. But secondly, we had to the Heisman people had to acknowledge O.J. Simpson's death. But they probably will never acknowledge Reggie Bush. Because Reggie got the Heisman taken away, which is just holy crap. we all owe Reggie Bush so much.
We might need to revisit, or if we can unvacate some wins from the past or something like that. I don't know if there's a procedure for that, but it might need to be something to look into.
Do over. Yeah. We will not be talking anymore about college football or college football rules or the supplemental draft, but please subscribe to the Trades 10 Years Later Substack. It's just a lot of fun. Very consistently, too. You've been pumping out a lot of fun stuff. Lots of niche players, especially baseball, that
Ike Davis
you will
last week.
Certainly not remember. Yeah, Ike Davis, some great Ike Davis coverage that we found. So highly recommend checking that out, keeping in tune with that. And I know I've seen your calendar every once in a while, and I know there are just some mega heaters that come up, especially in the middle of the summer when, all these sports have kind of active trade season. So I'm excited to see what comes next for that.
Big July coming.
Oh, yeah. I'm so ready for trade deadline 2014. and so today, we tried to pour through and see if there are any big news topics. But I think generally speaking, I think this was a time that we just kind of wanted to reflect. It feels like we're kind of fully in now. We're kind of separated from opening day a little bit. Obviously, things can still change a bunch. But I think this is a good time to kind of just get our first impressions of the season in. And kind of just take stock of where everyone is and make, wild judgments about those one way or another. Just kind of, like I said, kind of just taking stock of everything. And maybe I think part of what we wanted to do today is kind of whether we believe what's going on in front of our eyes or not believe what's going on in front of our eyes, because inevitably there's going to be someone we discuss today as wow, that guy's really good, huh? And we're never going to hear from him again, or we're going to look back in 2 months and he's totally irrelevant. That's why it's fun to bring these guys up now, because you never know when you're going to get the opportunity to do it again, just in case. So Ryan, just if you wanted to start off soft, I know you're a big Dodgers fan, and Dodgers have obviously had kind of an interesting couple weeks here. Last podcast got into the more fun stuff, but as far as what you've seen on the field, any first impressions of the Dodger season so far?
It's been up and down, I would say, but mostly up. It's hard to complain too much, even when things aren't going that well. The team over the past week has been losing more than winning, but that still has not been enough to get them down to 500. So, things aren't too bad. Otani is hitting like a machine. Mookie Betts is doing everything like a machine. Gavin Lux was making some quality plays at second base today. So there's still like signs of optimism. Feet. Yeah, all equal. Chris Taylor had a hit to he had a big game tying hit when his batting average walking into the batter's box was 28. So there's a lot That's of so ups sick. And downs that we're sort of working through still, but you know, I keep telling people, and I'm probably telling myself this also just as a means of reassurance, at some point this season, they're going to have an 11-game win streak. Like, I don't know why 11 is the number I keep repeating, but it just seems probable that at some point the 2024 LA Dodgers are going to win 11 straight games. And so a sequence where you lose three straight series is not going to feel quite as bad when we're in the midst of that. So one day soon, we'll see the 11 games get rattled off.
Right. And Tyler Glasnow today, it was today, right? He had his first like,
yep,
holy crap moment as a member of the Dodgers, which we knew he was capable of eventually. We obviously had to sort through the 5-inning, 3 runs, like looked good, but gave up a home run, you know, type starts, you know, that he has on a normal basis. But today, I think it was 8 scoreless, 10 strikeouts, just totally Lists dominant in every
looked great,
conceivable
had all
manner.
The stuff. And the one before that, it was probably his first like rough start. He allowed 6 runs to the Nationals, which is, you know, not really what any of us were hoping for. Just a couple home runs. And then the start before that actually against Minnesota was crazy too. He had 14 strikeouts in 7 innings. That was the one where it was like, oh my God, what's going on? And then today he, you know, echoed that in slightly less dominant fashion, but it was, you know, still really cool in Dodger Stadium too. Again, and the team won 10-0. So it was a good day today.
Yeah. And just while we're on the topic, there will be plenty of more conversation about this team and person and player, you know, the players we're talking about here. But how has the Yamamoto experience kind of developed over the last couple of weeks? I know it's been kind of been down as far as the, you know, final results, but what have you seen from that you either are super stoked on or not so stoked on?
We can have the fun conversation of it's April and none of this matters all that much, but there, you know, obviously when you have your first start and get totally bombed out of the first inning in Korea, that's not the greatest note and makes people a little bit more suspicious. So there have been a lot of high points where you can sort of see the potential and, you know, what he's done in the past and what people are buying in on in the future. But also, it's not quite all there yet. It's pretty plain to see they've been stretching him out more, and he went 99 pitches against the Mets in his most recent start. And he was getting hit around early, but ended up going 6 innings. So that was encouraging just to sort of see him bounce back and get into the game. And in that one in particular, he was getting all these 2-strike counts, and then they would hit it with 2 strikes. He had 9 strikeouts, but it easily could have been like 15 if he were able to finish some of these 2-strike counts more. And I don't know if that's just still an adjustment period to the new baseball or whatever. I don't know if it's just figuring out which pitch is most effective to get people out, or I don't know if it's just a deficiency in his game that worked in Japan and is going to hamstring him throughout his major league career. But it's definitely the kind of thing that you can look at and go, all right, that'll sort itself out. And, you know, the numbers aren't too exciting yet, like on the surface level, but he's still getting a lot of strikeouts. And that's exciting just on the baseline level. He's not walking guys and he's striking people out. So there's obviously good building blocks.
I do think there's a few of those at bats you'll see every once in a while where someone swings at a splitter and you're just like, what is this machine that has been shipped across, you know, this ocean to pitch in our league here for? You know, it's just like that is not normal looking. And all the like under the surface stuff obviously looks better because he got so screwed by a few, you know, couple home runs here or, you know, a few batted balls here. So I'm still very encouraged by it. I think the main thing is just that lack of command. You know, I mean, like, it's not like he's like walking a lot of guys, right? But command obviously goes into like, are you also putting the ball where you want it, even if it's in the strike zone, you know? So sometimes a little bit of that takes some time. I mean, I remember, I think I brought it up when we were talking about this, like before the season, that Senga last year finished with a great season. And you had to remember that, like, the first half of his season was just like, can this dude throw a strike? You know, like, it's just like, this dude cannot throw strikes at all. And he ended up being one of the top 10, 15 pitchers in baseball because things even out that way when you're that good. So I think that's the command was kind of the way it works. But
that's like a carry tool for him coming out of Japan, right? And he was such a command first guy.
It's like the thing. Yeah.
And there have been spots of that. Like you can see it from time to time where the catcher will target something and the pitch just goes right there. And the way it jumps out of his hand too, because he's a smaller guy, like the way the baseball explodes from his arm is just pretty crazy to see. And so when it does that and just like goes right towards its spot, it's like, oh boy, that's like video game stuff. But it's just been less consistent than you would think, especially for a skill like that that is theoretically premised somewhat on your consistency to repeat your motion and whatnot. But you know, new baseball, new adjustment. Things are still sorting themselves out. Not worried yet.
Yep. I was fortunate enough, I think this was what, 2 weekends ago now, to see the Braves in Atlanta. They took on the pennant winning Arizona Diamondbacks and we're down 0-6 in the first inning thanks to a disaster start by Max Fried, and then they won.
Unbelievable. Which was
like the craziest. Like I was just like, because every game, I feel like most of the baseball games I've been to tend to be like really nondescript. You know, like I'm like, oh, the Braves lost 3-2 or you know what, you know, it's like okay, and this was like amazing. You know, they kept like Fried basically had to stay in the game. I think he was at like 35, 37 pitches after this nightmare of like random, like the first hit of the game was like an absolute nuke from Ketel Marte. And then there were like 7 more hits in the inning or something like that, where it was like, oh God. And it wasn't necessarily his fault, right? It was just like, oh my God, we picked the worst game ever to go to actually. And they clawed back and won, which, you know, unfortunately, this is the most like first world ass thing that I could possibly say. But it's one of those teams where it's like, yeah, well, they're down 6. So if they just start, you know, scoring a little bit, you know, like it somehow did not feel like the air in the building had left, which is kind of shocking for any team.
I was going to ask, and it looks like they started
kind of fortunate.
Like the comeback started quickly enough, right?
Yeah, as I'd say, they got, when you get a couple on the board, it's like, all right, 4 or 5 looks a lot different than 6, right? Because if you go down 8,
right,
it's like, good luck. You know, you're now in like, you're in biggest comeback of the season territory. Like 6 still happens, you know what I mean?
That's a great point.
And when you give them time, you know, they have the time for it. So it's pretty fun to watch. And as far as my early impressions, it's funny seeing, you know, the team has been on fire, especially against, they've swept the Astros, who we'll talk about in a second. And, you know, I think they swept the D-backs. So they swept basically like, and like really handled really easily, like all these playoff teams. I think they're 12-2 against playoff teams from last year. If that mark is accurate. But they've lost to the White Sox once, which is also funny. But the guy carrying them is not Acuna, it's not Riley, it's not Harris, it's Marcelo Zuna, who I believe has the best OPS in baseball, or like, you know, up there with, you know, Mookie and like Colton Cowser, which is just, it's really funny. Like, you know, Marcel is obviously kind of a checkered player for many reasons. He was probably someone Braves fans were begging to release for several reasons within the last 2 years. And then he's just gone back to his old like 2020 self. And it's like, oh, this dude just hits everything as hard as he possibly can. And it's really working like really well. And it's been a little jarring. The Braves are currently trailing 4-3 in their game against the Rangers right now, looking for another sweep of the World Series champions. And Ozuna had a 3-run home run in the first inning of that game. So that's pretty much been the Braves update. I mean, this pitcher strider thing sucks, but like the offense is so good. It's like, well, you know, when this stuff is happening, it's like, you know, that every team's going to have injuries and big things happening, but, not every team's going to have an offense like this.
My impression is that Fried has not really been great either, you know, notwithstanding the one particular blow up start you got to witness, but even besides that, how's he looked? Cause this is his walk year, correct?
Yes, this is his walk year. Yeah, we were counting down. So the start he had before that was the one where he went 2 outs against the Phillies and got beat up.
Yeah, yep.
It was the one where he notoriously threw strike 3 down the middle that would have ended the inning at 0 runs. And then they called it a ball for no reason. his thing, I think it's kind of like the Yamamoto thing, except I would say probably more concerning, is that he is someone that has done really, he's been like a really great command pitcher for a long time. Like, he came up as kind of like a wild kind of, you know, he walked a lot of dudes basically until he was 25, 26 years old. And this year, if it's not walks, it's like something just a little off. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure if that's a health thing necessarily. You know, he had kind of some forearm issues last year that shut him down for a while. So that's kind of been the main thing. I mean, he is just getting lit up with hits, which just like, I don't trust that at all. Like, you know, I think that part is like, I don't care. You know what I mean? The stuff that I saw in that game that I was at, like, it's like, dude, this is a joke. You know, this is not replicable by anyone. But I would say I am concerned by someone that's been doing this for now, what, 8 years, which is kind of crazy to think about, compared to Yamamoto, who we're seeing for the first time, where when I see Fried's command and control drop off like it has, that's the part that I would, you know, mark as a red flag. He has been doing better. Like, he's had like normal starts, thank God. We were counting down like, oh, he's only at 41 ERA now, like during that game we were at, because it showed us like the, you know, batter by batter ERA as he was either getting shelled or getting guys out. So we went from like 81, I think, at the start of the second inning to like 22 or something like that to end the game.
Trimmed it to a robust 7.71.
I mean, it's 7.71 is a heck of an improvement after, you know, what's happened. So not too freaking out about it, but like, even these like better starts, I mean, he beat up the Marlins, which, like, okay.
Yeah.
We could talk more about the Marlins, but like, sure, whatever. And then the Astros was just like the most like mediocre start you could imagine. 3 runs, 4 walks, 2 Ks, you know. So it's like, even if that's an improvement, it's like, does it really, you know, where are we at? So I'm very curious to see how that kind of changes, but a very inconspicuous kind of start for his walk year, which is an interesting time for that.
But, you know, if we're covering the gamut of Braves starters, and we've mentioned that, you know, Fried has been ineffective and Spencer Strider is on the injured list, we should probably mention Reynaldo Lopez with a 0.5 ERA through 3 turns through the rotation, right?
Yeah, this is, I think, one thing that we can mention that is ties in with the Braves and another team, that you could make the case that the two best starters in baseball, there are some other names you can kind of have in that mix. I apologize if I'm like ripping a name from you later on based on what we talked about, but two converted relievers to starters are arguably the best two starters in baseball right now, and that's Reynaldo Lopez and who's the dude for San Francisco? Jordan Hicks.
Jordan Hicks, yeah.
Who is just like, he's just not hittable, yeah. Apparently, as a starting pitcher, which is just like, how does this happen? So as much as we think we know about pitching, I think we just basically have confirmed that we don't know anything, which is fun to experience every once in a while. Although I would like, you know, to have a little bit more of an understanding of why Reynaldo Lopez is good. So that's one that, you know, maybe put a pin on that. We'll check in a month or two and see if that's keeping up. But he's been really good. He's probably been their best starter by far because the rotation's been really bad. I don't think that's necessarily like means anything, but it's the truth.
Days. And of course, we can't really generalize from this that converting a reliever to a starter is a good idea, because then we have our friend AJ Puck in Miami, who is showing that sometimes some people are better suited for the bullpen.
Yeah, so I'd say we always have equal numbers of examples where it's like, why would you ever think this is a good idea, you idiots?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the AJ Puck experience. I think, what did I say, 2.8 whip? Which, like, when you get above 2 is just a funny thing for whip, period, because it means you're giving up several base runners in an inning. But 2.8 is a funny, 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 funny whip for a starting pitcher, you know?
On his own, like, that's a really good whip, but there are pitchers with 0.8 whip just by itself, and now you're adding a whole additional 2 on top of that. That's a lot.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. It's easier to, I think, poke at the bad things happening than the good things. We'll get to some more good things. Kind of later on, I wanted to highlight real quickly the Guardians are somehow 16-6, and I'm just seeing that record for the first time now, and I'm just like not cool with it. Just on the record, I don't like that at all. The Brewers are 14-6, which is kind of a surprise. Mets have gotten on a hot streak. Yankees have been good. We wanted to talk a little bit about the bad teams, because those are, I think those say more, because they're either confirming something that we felt about these teams, or they're introducing something that we didn't think was probably possible. The two teams that we wanted to highlight that firmly fit like the we know these teams are bad now are the Marlins and the White Sox. The Marlins are standing at a robust 6-17, which is actually like a significant improvement.
Yeah, is that a win streak or something?
Based on the way we were talking about them like days ago. They are 2-11 at home, 4-6 away. So maybe it's 4-6 in their last 10. So they just needed a trip away from
just
home.
A good
maybe.
Road trip.
And the White Sox are 3-18. There's nothing good happening there. I wanted to highlight one stat from the White Sox where the league leader, MLB league leader in caught stealings is Nicky Lopez, who is 0-4 in stolen bases. Ooh. He does not have a steal and he leads the league in caught stealings. Yeah, it's pretty good. I highly recommend opening up the White Sox baseball reference page.
I just found a banger staggering. White Sox stat just live. You want it?
Yeah,
so we mentioned that the White Sox are 3-18, and their three victories were, as you know, one to the Braves. They won 3-2, so that's a one-run victory. And on April 9th, they...
In the middle of like a monsoon, just to be clear.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, in the giant rainstorm. And then a week later, April 9th, they beat the aforementioned Cleveland Guardians 16-6 by a score of 7-5. So that was a two-run victory. And then 8 days after that, they beat the Kansas City Royals 2-1. So that was a one-run victory. So they have won by a combined margin of victories so far this season of 4 runs.
Right.
3 wins, and it's a one-run game, a two-run game, and a one-run game. By contrast, in their most recent loss, they lost by 4 runs, and in their most severe loss, they lost by 10 runs to the Reds, 1-11.
I'm actually stunned it's not worse. Like, if you had to tell me, like, hey, guess at the worst margin of victory the 3-18 White Sox have had, I would have guessed probably 13. It would be like 12.5 would be my over under. So the fact that they've only lost by 10, I think is kind of a testament to them so far, considering it is hard to imagine this season going worse for them after trading Cease and having everyone that we actually know the name of on the team getting hurt or becoming Andrew Benintendi.
Kind of like actual analysis that we can do there, though, because I mean, I guess that means that the pitching is only bad and not like completely atrocious, and that it's the offense who's really like irredeemable here, which, you know, a quick study of their schedule so far suggests is correct. I'm tallying up real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the White Sox have been shut out 7 times already in their 20 games that they have played in 2024, which, you know, it's.
That's insane.
It's really hard to win games when you are shut out a third of the time. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
Imagine a team getting shut out, 53 times in a year?
That's what they're pacing for. Dude, what is that? Oh.
I'm rooting for that now. Holy man, that's good. So yeah, I mean, you know, part of this is picking on the White Sox, but the Marlins, like, I feel like I came into the season wondering, like, am I crazy or is this team like rat ass? Because I looked at the roster and I'm like, because like the Fangraphs still had them as like a 20% playoff team, which is like, you're like a fringe playoff team, you know, like 80 something win team. Right. And I'm like, we're this one?
Yeah.
Like, that's how my head was thinking, because the Marlins notoriously went, I think, 4 months in the offseason without signing a single player.
Yeah.
Like, not any player that was not already a Marlin. And I think the first one was, like, a backup catcher, maybe. I don't even know who it would have been. Like, basically, they just opted out of the offseason. And then they already had Sandy Alcantara out for the year. They lost Yuri Perez for the year. And they're starting AJ Puck.
Yeah.
Oh, they signed Tim Anderson. That was big signing that the Miami Marlins has, was signing Tim Anderson after the year he had, which I understand why you do, but you also have to understand what that could potentially mean. And boy, howdy, has that been what it's been, you know, 571 OPS, which is basically exactly the same as last year. So they have just been a mess, and obviously it has improved a little bit. I mean, they still have some major league caliber players like Luzardo, I think we all think is good. Edward Cabrera is fun, but they're kind of in the same zone as the White Sox whenever, you know, like Brian De La Cruz and Jazz Chisholm aren't hitting. It's just like a nightmare, you know, of hitting. Luis Arraez is just not the same guy.
Oh,
who'd have thought?
Yeah, that's a lot less fun when you're batting 270. That's, huh?
When you're batting 270 and your defense is as bad as it's ever been, I feel like I saw a thing that he's already been worth like negative seven runs defensively.
No.
Or some like outrageous number. Yeah, he's dead last in outs above average on StatCast at negative seven. Because I think he's playing second base full time right now. Not good. Best whiff rate in the league, though. So good job, Luis. So, I mean, you have been in our conversations, and I'll bring this up, what we had discussed.
Thank you.
Specifically related to the Marlins in a second. But, you know, what have you seen that has made you join the crusade and thinking this team is just maybe destined for an all-time kind of horrible season?
Well, I think that there's a sense in which we just I don't want to say that we got baited by expectations, because, you know, it's the Marlins and what's actually happened is the predictable thing, but they had so much theoretical, like, narrative momentum, right? They make the playoffs last year as a wild card team with a bunch of young players, and it's like, oh, this is all exciting. But it really was, like, transparently at the time, even, it's not like we really thought they were good. It was smoke and mirrors. They had a terrible run differential. They were outscored by several dozen runs last season and just happened to win games because, you know, they had a great bullpen and probably got lucky. And then this year, when you follow up on that by doing just absolutely nothing, and then you just suffer injuries to pitching to take away from that further, it's tough. So it's like they have sort of this White Sox problem, but different, where it's less like intergalactically bad hitters and just kind of a complete lack of good ones. Although I guess this catcher position is pretty intergalactically bad because it looks like every single catcher on the roster has a negative OPS plus, but it's just like a lot of like mediocre throughout the roster, right? Like no one is a good hitter here. And then you get to the relief pitchers who are supposed to be like this great thing. And there are just way too many guys in this bullpen who are setting things on fire. Like Sixto Sanchez, it's cool that he's pitching in the majors, I guess. He's not pitching very well. Andrew Nardi has a ERA above 10. So does a man named George Soriano, who has somehow gotten into eight games for them. And it's just like, why is this happening? There's all of a sudden the holes on a roster that's just like really sort of patchwork together. Like when that turns into a lights out bullpen and you win a bunch of games and outperform your run differential, it's a lot cooler than when it goes the other way and the variance blows up in your face. But it's weird. There's like still good performances here. Declan Cronin is apparently a pretty good reliever. Heck. Ryan Weathers has been sick. He has a 270 ERA out of the rotation.
Yeah. Which who would have thought after his start of his career,
like completely he was the shocking
Preller. Why is Preller bringing up this 20-year-old to pitch who isn't very good and not good for like 3 years running and has been solid. And, you know, they got him for probably very little. Was he in that Garrett Cooper trade? So like for Reynolds, basically?
Yeah, it was Garrett Cooper for Weathers and Sean Reynolds. Never heard of Sean Reynolds.
I'm mentally ill. If I know
that's
that.
Nuts.
That sucks for me. Holy crap. But yeah, he's been like him and AJ Puck were like amazing in spring training. One of them has kept that up. One of them is just completely not. But yeah, like you said, like when a team is unwilling to kind of account for any possible negatives, you know, when a team basically, like I said, opts out of signing players or like trading for players that matter. And then a couple of the guys are like, all right, well, at least we'll have so-and-so. And then they're gone before, you know, the second pitch of spring is thrown. And so when you lose all these players or you don't prepare for things, you get a lot of Vidal Brujan starting at shortstop. And like, I love the guy. Like, I promise I was all in on Vidal Brujan. I used to. Not long ago, and man, it is tough out there.
It's rough.
You know, like we both listened to Bill Simmons, you know, we're both Simmons heads. And I think him and Zach Lowe and them, you know, they have Poku Island and right. You know, all this stuff. And I think Vidal Brujan Island is like very close to washing into the sea off the coast of Florida.
Yeah, it is being reclaimed.
You know, it is bad out here. Yeah, the nature is reclaiming Vidal Brujan Island.
Although, I don't know. Like, the only reason why I would still hold out hope for Vidal Brujan is that Miami's second best hitter right now is Nick Gordon. So, like, you know, maybe it takes people a while to find their major league destinies, I guess, and Vidal Brujan is going to have hope on a different team. But probably not on this roster in this year.
Yeah, so it's been tough for the Marlins. Like I said, they have been doing a little bit better, and at least they do have like some players that are playing. That like, if Jazz went on a hot streak, it would not surprise you. Ryan De La Cruz is on like somewhat of a hot streak. You know what I mean? It's whatever. It's better than the White Sox. So at least they got that going for them.
Have though is that, and maybe this is less of a thing with the White Sox, is that like, you know, these guys are going to sell. Yeah. Like, they were looking for the first excuse to sell off all their players who made any money. And like, they definitely have it. Like, they're selling everyone at this trade deadline.
Yeah. It's not even, They knew what they were getting themselves into. We're throwing in real quick before we get into some actually interesting teams that are struggling, that the Rockies are also 5-16.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe this. That isn't just insulting. I think we knew where this was going.
Yeah, it's not as interesting of one to discuss because, you know, could have told you that.
Unfortunately, we saw this coming to such a shocking degree that it's almost hard to fathom.
Brenton Doyle, league average hitter, though.
Their first game of the season. Their first game of the season was the 1-16 game.
Yep.
That's crazy, man. Loris Montero, 464 OPS as a first base DH. Nolan Jones cratered. It's it. But the team/division that I wanted to focus on, if we are talking about like what is happening here, is the AL West, where the Rangers beat the Braves, which they probably will. We'll see. They're going to be 12-11 leading the division, followed by the Mariners. All these teams are under 500. The Mariners, the Angels, the Athletics at 8-14, and the Houston Astros at 7-16, who I mentioned before got swept by the Braves. They got bullied by the Yankees early in the season. They just got... Did they get swept by the Nationals? No, they lost 2 out of 3 to the Nationals. It's been tough out here for the former juggernaut. I mean, like, ongoing, you know, favorites every single year, right, of the American League. And it's just kind of stunning to see a team with that record like that. What has been your primary impression of the Astros' badness this year?
Super strange to me because all of the guys who you just like, if you're making a quick list of the Astros good players, like all those guys are good. Jose Altuve is having an incredible year.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, they're great. It's just like the thing that I feel like the Astros have done that's really propelled their whole, is dynasty the right word for what it's been the past time? Like, not really, but whatever comes close to that. The fuel has been
Bill Simmons would question it.
Yeah, it's like quasi dynasty, tier 2 dynasty. It's because like they pull these pitchers out of their minor league system who are very little regarded, and then suddenly able to become four starters, anchor of solid rotation, and that's sort of been like partially still happening because Ronel Blanco threw a no hitter and has been pitching otherwise incredibly.
Yeah.
The Hunter Brown and J. experience tier, really like where they stumbled, and we'd expect guys to be at least serviceable if it's the Astros doing what the Astros do. And they've been really, really not that at all. Josh Hader's been bad, which is also not been, but it's really like this rotation depth. Like it's been the big goal for them.
Yeah, it's kind of an all-around pitching disaster, which, like you said, has been the thing that they've been able to consistently avoid. You know what I mean? Because they've had Christian Javier around, they've had Luis Garcia around. They've always had like some answer to like, all right, this dude might not be the best pitcher on any team, but he is good enough to like pitch in a playoff game. He's good enough to do, you know, like have a real role, right? And like Christian Javier, while he's a strange pitcher, he has undeniably been a very valuable player, both as like a swingman, reliever, starter in the postseason, especially. Currently, he just went on the IL today. Framber's on the IL. Luis Garcia's having Tommy John surgery. And I'm sure there are others I'm missing, leaving France, Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrighetti in the reinforcements, and Renaud Blanco behind Justin Verlander, who just returned. So that's already like a cat four, you know, meltdown before you get to the fact that their eighth and ninth inning guys both have ERAs in the 8.3s.
Yeah.
You know, and like Hader, if you just look at like, oh, he's striking a bunch of guys out and he's not walking a ton, it's fine. If you watch him, it's like not good looking. Mm. It's not representative of a guy who's getting unlucky. You know, it's someone that looks like he doesn't really have it right now. And we saw notably what happened the last time that Josh Hader didn't really have it.
Yeah.
And that was a wild month or two. was a shockingly bad period in Josh Hader's career. That pivot point to the, you know, the Padres era. And like Ryan Pressly has not been good either. So they have this kind of double, you know, twin killing that's happening in their bullpen and rotation where guys got hurt or are like severely underperforming at really critical times. And the benefit that they have is that, you know, they got guys like Verlander coming back and their division has been really bad so far. But like, at what point are we supposed to think this pitching is going to get better if these guys are hurt and they don't really have any ways of improving it? You know, so I think that's why it's worth talking about now, because like, are we seeing something that's going to be like, you know, all season long, them like trying to swing themselves back into contention and struggling to do so? Because right now, I don't see like where the upside is, you know, unless Hader and them just start locking everything down immediately, you know?
Theoretically, you know, that you wait for guys to get healthy, but I don't know how many of them are going to. And it's weird, like, even their pitching depth, it's kind of populated with guys that you don't want to see pitching, or like guys who aren't really prospects, right? It's not like they're going to call someone up and have them do well. The closest thing, I guess, would be Spencer Arrighetti, who's been horrible in his times through the rotation so far. They've called Forrest Whitley up, like, unironically. And it's,
dude, watching Forrest Whitley pitch against the Braves was like seeing a ghost.
I can't believe it.
It was one of the most shocking experiences I've had as a baseball watch. I'm like, that's him. He's here. He threw 99. Oh, he's given up a couple of runs.
he has a 12-23.
He's optioned into AAA again.
Yeah, and no strikeouts in his 0.2 innings. It's, you know.
0 ERA though, because I think he committed his own error.
Oh, good.
Mistaken.
That's a savvy
someone
play.
Committed an error.
It's just like
something along,
you know,
those lines. But
it's not sad because it's like the team that evokes the least sympathy of any team. But it's just like you sort of see them running out of barrel. You know, like they've been like just reaching into this barrel of monkeys and pulling out an endless pile of pitchers, and now it's kind of like an empty barrel. And I hate to point out this correlation, but I believe the was their GM James Click, is that sounds right? The guy who was very famously not retained.
See, the current one or the
old guy? Yeah.
Yes,
and then
right.
He basically got ousted. And my recollection of this is Jim Crane started taking more control over personnel decisions, signing guys like Jose Abreu and Josh Hader, and it's not really looking so good so far.
The Jose Abreu thing is like that. That's another one where it's like, that's just sad, man.
Yeah.
Like that is just like a sad. Real, this is getting like bummer territory.
Yeah.
This is a dude who is never anything but just like, you can pick on how great Jose Abreu was, right? He's a first baseman whose top skill was just like consistent hitting and driving in runs. Like he's like the classic 300 guy, which, you know, is like kind of a old school way of measuring talent. But like there's something to be said about someone that you plug in a cleanup spot and he just rules, right? And that was what he was for 10 years. Has it been 10 years? Like, well, yeah, 2014. So like the first eight of those years, basically. Yeah. So, and including the MVP 2020 year where he was just like disgustingly clutch, you know what I mean? Which,
yep.
Say what you want, it was the truth. And then ever since he's gotten to Houston, like last year was a disaster. And this year, if last year is a disaster, I don't even know what to say. You know what I mean? Because, like, I don't think he's done a single thing right on the baseball field.
Yeah, last year was a disaster.
Like, he has a negative 32 OPS plus.
Negative 32. Like, last year's a disaster in the context of, like, we just gave you a big 3-year free agent contract and you've been the most consistent hitter ever and you're finally not that, right? Like, last year was the first year of his career where he hadn't been something close to that 300-3100 guy like you were mentioning. And he's like, wasn't that he was a 240 18 90 guy, 90 RBI, still pretty good. But like then this year it's just gone into actual like you're unplayable territory. Like
yeah, it's the Albert Pujols decline was like, man, we all know Albert isn't good right now, but like he hit 25 home runs and he had 99 RBI, you know. It's like, that's, you know, like he looks like a baseball player still.
Yeah.
And like maybe I thought that's where Jose Abreu's floor would be, where it's like, this is not an exciting player, but he's just like driving in runs, which I do think has some value. It doesn't have a lot of value, it has some value. Just a quick pop quiz. Jose Altuve has 56 total bases this year. How many total bases does Jose Abreu have?
That'd be single digit. It's got to be single digit, but it also, I'm going to say nine. I'm going to say nine.
Five is the answer to that question. He has 4 hits and 1 double, 1 RBI. No home
runs. He is slugging 85.
No caught stealings, unlike Nicky Lopez. Yeah, 85. What was the stat that I saw? Oh, his batting average is lower than the number on his jersey, which I believe he wears 79,
I think. Yeah.
Which if 70, yeah. Like whenever, if you say that about anyone's number, it's embarrassing, especially someone that has kind of like a weird high number. Yeah. Like there's no way to spin that stat with it being good. And he somehow has one of the more hard to fathom versions of that, and it's still true. So that's just, it's we're never gonna root for the Astros success, you know what I mean? We are specifically you very specifically are never going to do that, but definitely a strange watch so far this season. And like, you know, if someone desperately needs like Seth Lugo tomorrow, it's probably like the Houston Astros, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they really freaking need like help.
Dude, they could use Jordan Lyles at this point, I think. Like they just need someone who they can put in their
rotation.
That's
what I'm saying. Like they just need innings, man. Like they need something. So they're all their metrics are falling precipitously. Like there's nothing really great going on other than, hey, Jose.
Yeah.
Hey, no hitter. Like what? You know? Alex Bregman, sneaky 613 OPS. And I think this is his walk year, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, no home runs.
So no home runs. People have been wondering about him for a little while, and that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
I think they're the main team. I think they're the number one team that I kind of circled and really wanted to mention. Oh, and I forgot to mention, I broke up a little bit. We had to edit it, but the last point I wanted to make about the Marlins was that I bet you like a week and a half ago that the Nationals would finish firmly worse than the Marlins going the rest of the way. And ever since I made that handshake agreement with you, I have just regretted it every second of the way.
Yeah.
I still am like cool with it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like reneging on it, but like, just to be clear, it makes me wildly nervous seeing how bad that Marlins team is. But it's not at the Nationals.
Better since then, but yeah, I mean, it's just, and there's that sell potential that's just looming so big, like a big red button over their heads. Probably less true with the Astros, but who knows?
That's the big thing. You know, like the Nationals, like, who are they trading?
Such a good question. It's
like, the only guys they're trading are like Joey Gallo, who already sucks. You know, like the Marlins could theoretically be in a position where, should we trade, you know, Jesus Luzardo? Should we trade Luis Arraez? Like, should we trade the guys that have any hope for improvement, you know, or for getting us that kind of as muck? So that's kind of the disaster downside of the side of the bet I took here. So that will be, I will keep track of that for us. And I know we talked about it previously, you know, plenty, but yeah. So yeah, but the Astros, I think, were the main one I wanted to highlight, just because that's been really like kind of strange the way they've just fallen apart so quickly. The last thing I wanted to do as far as like our early kind of impressions of the season, I had us each find three players and like, you know, write down their stats or however you wanted to do it, and just kind of blindly give our takes to each other, or like, you know, throw the name out and we can kind of say if we're in on what they're doing for the rest of the season or out. So I believe based on what we talked about, these are six players that have had great starts to the season. I don't know if you picked any that had really bad starts or anything, but six players have had really strong starts to the season. We will decide if we believe it or not. Do you want to start with player one?
I'll give you a guy. I've got two guys who have been really good to start the season and one who has been not so good to start the season, but I'll start with one of the guys who's been good.
Okay.
You know, he's got a 400 on base percentage, 630 slugging percentage, a 190 WRC plus.
Okay, good. We didn't pick
that is top five in baseball.
Uh-huh.
This player is Josh Naylor mm-hmm. of the Cleveland Guardians. How do you feel about that?
Ooh. So Josh Naylor is someone that I really did not like for a few years. Because first of all, this is the meanest way of describing it. Just look at him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Fangraphs the
it's not the guy that you look at and you're like, whoa.
Naylor is a Husky slugger with a 55 hit tool. And I feel like Husky slugger is a little worse than what you just said.
Husky slugger is sick. As someone that would like, the best version of me would be the Husky slugger. Like, I love it in a certain risk, but like, he came into the league as, okay, we at like age 23 or whatever he came into the league as, we know for a fact this man cannot play defense at all, and he was playing a lot of like outfield. He was a no gloves guy, which is a tough thing to pull off. He already kind of has this weird body, and he was kind of like the only power hitter on a team with no power hitters outside of Jose Ramirez. He was also known for these weird outbursts that he had in the playoffs, right? Where he did have that one game, and I think that one game against the Yankees, where he had like some just crazy like power display, like 5 for 5 or something like that.
Yankees, whatever. Right, I'll check.
I think people generally know what playoff series he was in. So he's been an interesting guy. I have turned on it a little bit positively. He's someone that has really good contact skills for like the type of player he is. Like, I feel like we talk a lot of guys about like Alejandro Kirk and stuff like that, because he's kind of like, I feel like Alejandro Kirk is who. Like, Josh Naylor is like the good version of that. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't strike out a lot. He can have a lot of power. It just seems like it's all kind of clicking for him this year. It clicked for him last year too, but it's almost like you have to grade on a curve for Cleveland Guardians hitters. You know, it's like he hit 17 home runs last year and he's like, whoa, you know, power hitter in Cleveland here, you know? And it's like, but the numbers he's putting up now are like, really good. I still question like the overall value because he feels more like a DH type to me, even though he's a good one. But I would say I'm in for the most part. I would say he's probably going to be one of their all-stars, I think. So I would say that's probably enough to say I'm in.
Let me boil down the question using your own terminology to you know, a harder answer. Do you think that he's going to be a Cleveland slugger and the Cleveland power hitter? And it seems like at least like he's for real to do that. Do you think he has the potential to break through and be like one of the MLB sluggers? Like one, you think of baseball's best hitters and Josh Naylor actually comes to mind.
I'm going to go no.
Okay.
I'll stop short of that.
All right.
I'll say this is a sign of good things. Because he had an 842 OPS last year. That was 132 OPS plus. I mean, I guess it's tough because it's like 132 OPS plus is one of the better hitters in baseball, right? So it's like a tricky thing. So if I think he can be like a 140, right? If he goes into like 850, like 860, 870 OPS, like that's really good. It's just like, I don't know if that, like, I don't think he's a star level player overall, even if he's a really good hitter. Does that make sense?
I think so.
So I would say it's a very mild thumbs up, but I'm not willing to like crown him yet. So maybe that's a, you know, cagey way of saying I'm not fully in.
All right, but it's still, it seems generally in. Still thinking it can be an improvement on last year at least.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he has 10 strikeouts in 20 games, and he's like their best hitter. Like that's like really good.
Yeah, that's a great profile.
And he's never walked a ton, which is like which makes it kind of strange. But like, I mean, if I'm being honest about what I like in players, I'd rather them swing than not swing. I've had this conversation with you and many others like many times over. I am going to be the one that looks at Josh Naylor and then looks at Juan Soto. And I'm going to be like, kind of like watching Josh Naylor more than Juan Soto sometimes. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just like for some reason, it's more fun. It's more interesting. Even though I know it's like, you know, obviously there's a talent gulf there. So I'm very intrigued. I will not say I'm fully 100% all in on Josh Naylor yet, but, you know, I think he has proved me wrong in the first impressions that I had of him as a major league player, which I will give him all the credit in the world for.
I got two facts on Josh Naylor to close out before we get to the first guy on your list. Number one, he was a first round draft pick in 2015 by the Miami Marlins, which I knew but had forgotten about. Just what sorts of talent have these people traded away?
Same.
Second,
it's crazy, it's, man.
The Josh, you might imagine, is short for Joshua, and it sort of is. His first name is Joshua Douglas with a hyphen. It's Joshua Douglas James Naylor.
What in the world?
Josh what? Doug Naylor.
That's crazy. That's actually wild.
That's all I got.
Pride of Mississauga. Cool. He was committed to play at Texas Tech. He would have been at Texas Tech the same time Patrick Mahomes was there. Let's go.
What a friendship they could have struck up.
Because he would have been a freshman at 2016. Let's go. What a history that would have been. All right. So my first guy, kind of in a comparable boat, a little bit fresher, but not quite that different, I don't think, age-wise. Also kind of like a questionable defender, but part of that has turned around this year, which has partly been the reason that he's been really good. Slashing 324, 435, 563 is Spencer Steer of the Cincinnati Reds. Also in the same boat as Josh Naylor, where if you look at like strikeouts to walks, it's just like, you know, chef's kiss. Like dude has a master control of the strike zone right now, at least. After, you know, he was more kind of typical last year. He had a good rookie season. He had an 820 OPS. So he was already kind of impressive that sense, but he was also like an awful defender that I couldn't find a space for. I think he's kind of locked down left field, if I'm not mistaken. The Reds have just had the most like bizarre choices for defensive positions for like ever since Nick Senzel has been drafted. It's just been, what are the Reds doing, broadly speaking? I believe he has taken over left field and he has been solid at it to go along with his quite impressive 999 OPS, which is a 173 OPS plus. He's also perfect 4-for-4 in stolen bases, the anti-Nicky Lopez, with 3 home runs and 18 RBI entering today. So just pretty much good at everything you can be good at so far this season, Spencer Steer.
The really easy way to do this would be to caveat and say, yeah, of course, because I think that the way I felt going into this season was like, here are the Cincinnati Reds, and they've got 5 compelling position player, maybe not prospects, but like, you know, young guys who are going to be on their MLB team. And guys, it was like, of those 5, I think 3 are probably going to be good. And then, you know, we'll figure out which ones in a year. So under that basis, Spencer Steer, of course, he was going to be the one that's great, not Christian Encarnacion Strand. That guy sucks. But like this is a really, really good start to the season. And I didn't know he was in left field. That kind of makes it more interesting to me, because that at least gives him a place.
Yeah, I think they have ejected him from the infield. Yeah, I will double check to make sure. I don't believe he is playing. He's played a couple games at first base, so, you know, kind of net neutral
generally
in that sense. But
field seems correct.
The first 20 games of the season were pretty much left field. Yeah,
I don't know. I kind of think I'm in, just because there's a lot to be in on, right? Like he was putting together signs of promise last year, and, you know, showing you a little bit of all the tools except for, you know, very, very notably defense was not among them. And it's probably too good of a step forward. I don't know if I'm gonna be in on the 1000 OPS going forward, but I definitely think like above average major league hitter, like he's gonna be one of the Reds to hit. Like I'm firmly putting him in the category of, like, this will work out.
Yeah. And it's worth noting he is dropping as far as, like, total, you know, like, production. Like, most of it is front-loaded toward the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to start with him, though, is because, like, one, like, I don't think we would get out of control of our Spencer Steer takes regardless.
I think we're true.
Oh, he's good. You know what I mean? But, like, also, like, Spencer Steer is the most, like, maybe nondescript person I've ever seen put on a baseball
also
uniform.
True.
Like, I just cannot imagine, like, having a less impactful look and name, and, you know, it's just like all the things that you'd be like, well, I would root for this guy more if he was blank, you know, like if he had, like, a, you know, Christian Encarnacion Strand is like a pretty crazy name, you know what I mean? Or like, you know, De La Cruz runs really fast and hits the ball really hard. Like, Spencer Steer has like no identifiable characteristics in any part of his life, other than is good at baseball. Which is just like,
I'm gonna push back. It's like a 7 out of 10 name. It's or like a 60 grade name, I think. I think Spencer Steer as a baseball name is like, you know, it's not Christian Encarnacion Strand, but I think it's above average. I don't think
it's kind of just regular.
Yeah.
Everything about him is pretty regular. Let's even give him a little bit more credit. It's everything that I would expect out of a major league baseball player, which is kind of a compliment, right? It's like, this is like, if Spencer Steer was like a one-time all-star from the 1960s, be like, sure. Mm-hmm. Like, dear, wouldn't question it at all. He even looks like it. You know what I mean? He looks like someone that played, you know, when baseball is being desegregated. You know what I mean? Like, but, I mean, you go to his Statcast page, and while he's not, you know, the fielding is still just like, he's just basically treading water there, but like basically every single thing he has on Statcast is red, which is obviously nice. It doesn't mean a ton yet, but very valuable overall. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of the same as Josh Naylor. I think both of us think, you know, this is very positive. And obviously, like, when you show this type of talent early on, even if you don't like maintain that level, I think there are enough good signs there to think he's probably like one of the most 3 impactful Reds hitters, right? If we're thinking their total season, right? I think Ellie would have to be 1, and then you could make the case for Steer at 2. Who would even be in front of it? I think maybe firmly 2nd.
No one is coming to mind. I don't know who pitches for them.
Because a lot of their guys just got like randomly hurt, like TJ Friedel and whatever. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think he's another guy that could be lined for, like, you know.
But Fangraphs War, the two guys that you mentioned each have one, and then third is Jake Fraley with 0.5. So that's a very firm 1 and 2.
Yeah, so a bit
and
of a drop
I agree with the order you put
know,
them
lots
in.
Of injuries
too.
They've had and stuff like that, too. Yeah, cool. Go with your number
all
two.
All right, number two, let's go to the pitching side, just because that's... we'll switch it up a bit. Yeah. Pitching is weird this year as a general matter, as, you know, for all sorts of reasons, which largely has to do with injury and small sample size and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there are only 5 pitchers in MLB who have 1 win above replacement or more, according to Fangraphs. The normal category of those 5.
I feel as though this is strong, like... I'm putting this at like a 70% chance 100%. To get the same guy.
Yeah, no,
but
well, maybe.
Proceed.
Let's see, because I think that we've got, of these 5, 40% are in like the normal category, Zach Wheeler and Luis Castillo. Then 40% are in the Boston category, Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck. And I've got the 5th guy, Reed Detmers.
It is not the same guy. Let's go. Reed Detmers. Give me the Reed Detmers
Reed
profile.
Reed Detmers is a... still young pitcher because he was debuted so early. He is still 24 years old. He is the ace of the Los Angeles Angels staff. 1.19 ERA so far this year. A lot of strikeouts. You know, some walks, but not too many. It's 30 strikeouts in 22.2 innings against only 7 walks. And, like, finally suppressing runs, you know, has not allowed a home run, which helps things. Probably not going to keep that up forever, but the other peripherals seem to be trending better and still, you know, young enough where there might be breakout potential. I've been a Reed Detmers guy basically since the draft. He was drafted in 2020, the COVID year, so like really didn't have much of a draft year to evaluate, and it was a lot of, you know, speculative based on what he was doing then. And even in his MLB debut, which has not been lights out so far, I think that considering how young he's still been, he's looked pretty competent over the last few years, and this might be the year where he sort of put it all together. So what say you about Reed Detmers?
And he was also the classic, I mean, the Angels have done this now for several years. Like, I mean, how many damn years in a row where they picked the guy who's like, he could be in the major leagues tomorrow, you know? And it's like, we know they do this every time. Like, and it's worked out, you know, I guess there's a certain respect. Okay. But you know, he was really thrown in the fire very fast. And despite that has been like, okay. Yeah. You know what I mean? He has not had, he's kind of like inconsistent, you know, and, but like to be inconsistent and be like a high 3s, low 4s, like lefty, you know, in a division with the Rangers and the Astros and stuff, like you certainly would not pin the problems that the Angels have had on Reed Detmers. You know, he has basically done exactly what you would want a young, inexperienced pitcher to do. I believe his velocity is way up.
That is familiar to me.
I'm trying to pull that up.
I don't have confirmation of that, but I do recall.
I will find that right now. Let's see.
Okay,
it is
great.
Not. I think he might have had like a game or two, you know, where maybe, you know, maybe he spikes it, you know, like high 90s, but just pretty like that looks like he's down like half a tick, you know, so basically not significant. Looks like everything is slowed down a little bit. He's just better at pitching. I will say I'm in on this. You know, obviously, again, like I don't think he's a 1 point whatever ERA guy. I think there's enough like justification there of like when someone gets thrown in the fire like that and like lives to tell the tale over the course of 3 years and they can come out the other side. I think there's definitely a strong case to be made that that guy can be a legitimate major leaguer. I think most other teams, if you look at his age, his experience, and what he did, a lot of teams might not be having him in the major league rotation until right now. You know what I mean? Like at age 24, that's a pretty normal aging curve for what he was a college pitcher, right? Like he would have had 2 years in the minors or whatever. He debuted his first year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he had 14 starts in the minor leagues and was already in the majors. And that was 2021. Like, you know, he was like close to immediate because he got drafted in 2020 where everyone was just basically invisible for a few months. So, yeah, I think this is pretty good. And I've put myself in a position where I would really like to see the Angels succeed in some form just for Ron Washington's nice. Sake. Like, it would just be great to see Anthony Rendon welcome back to the injury list after being like, Anthony Rendon had been like weirdly decent for like a week, and I'm like, oh, and then he immediately like just, tweaks a hamstring.
Such a quick
and he's
narrative
like,
cycle
so
of
bad.
Just like Anthony Rendon hasn't gotten a hit since before Nolan Chanuel was drafted, and then it's like Anthony Rendon, he's on the comeback trail, and now there we go.
I was like, whoa, leadoff hitter, yeah, it's the same story. But I do think, he has had the most kind of like good signs for the Angels over this staff they've had. Like, if you said like Patrick Sandoval had like a one ERA, I'm like, I don't care. Like, I think he's a bad pitcher. Doesn't, by the way, he has like a 6.75 ERA. But like, you know what I mean? Like, it's I don't trust Griffin Canning. I think you can sell me on Reed Detmers starting pitcher one for a mediocre team. And I think that is a great developmental success. So I will say I am in. Do you have any strong opinions either way?
I kind of feel like as we're working through this, the question that we're sort of asking is like, do you think they can make an all-star team in 2024, right? Like, because that's sort of the anchoring thing.
Yeah, that's what
I'm
thinking.
Will they keep this
up
long enough to make an all-star team? And in Detmer's case, I definitely think so. I mean, they've got a pretty clear, like, mandatory all-star guy in Mike Trout as long as he's healthy. But I think that on the pitching side, especially in a year when it's been like so scary out there to have an arm and throw a baseball, if he's able to keep this up and stay healthy, which I'll knock on like all the surfaces nearby to try to keep the case, he is gonna like be good enough to pitch in the All-Star game, I think. And there's exciting stuff. He's been striking guys out the whole time, and if he's actually like limiting the walks a little bit more, that makes the whole package a lot more exciting. So good luck, Reed. Oh, I had 2 points. The other one is Ryan Weathers is the other like comparable age 24 pitcher who's been just like, oh, what have you been doing around the majors? And I feel like one went to college and had the chance to get a little bit better, and one was developed by the Padres organization and didn't. So could be it.
Correct. Yeah, makes sense. So my guy is similar in a lot of ways, and that's why I was like, oh, crap. You know, we landed on the same guy, especially when you're like, 40% of these guys are on this team. 40%, you know. It turns out this guy is just below one. I think he's at like 0.8 WAR on Fangraphs, 0.9 or something on BREF. So whatever calculations they're doing has him slightly under the Reed Detmers of the world. But I think this guy has just been broadly one of the better stories to begin the season. We mentioned the $350 million man for the Dodgers, Yamamoto, earlier. The much less heralded version of that coming out of Japan was Shota Imanaga, who has joined the Cubs and is, you know, I'm going to say it, I think has been the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah,
I think he's just been outstanding. He has pitched 21 some innings. I think three of those starts he's had have been scoreless. And that includes like, I think two or three games in Wrigley where it has just been like hell on earth as far as like balls, you know, flying all over the place. And, you know, just the wind there in April is just a nightmare to deal with for everyone, you know. So to be able to exit that those situations with, you know, no runs in any context is pretty damn impressive. He did it against Los Angeles for a few innings, you know, hasn't been like overwhelming. I think the first start he went almost six innings with no hits. So it was like a great, great, great first impression. Three wins in those first starts, basically no walks, basically like I think one home run. About as sparkling as you could have asked for, especially considering the conditions he's had to pitch in at age 30 years old. So, you know, interestingly enough, you know, I guess we talked about it before, Yamamoto has seemingly had this, you know, hurdle to get through in his first month, whereas Imanaga has looked better, you know, than he ever has in Japan. I don't know what contributes to that. I do know certain things that can lead to that, but what is your, have you gotten to watch him pitch yet?
Actually, he pitched against the Dodgers, and it was like the first Dodgers game of this year I didn't see. So I haven't sat down and watched him pitch a full start, but I've seen pitches, you know, in today's day and age. I've seen the stuff, I guess, but I feel like that's not really like the whole package here, right? Like, it seems like he's doing something that sort of is a beyond sum of parts situation. Like, so here's what I'm having a tough time with, right? I'm on his Baseball Savant page, and obviously a lot of the numbers are pretty good, but I'm having a tough time squaring that he is 100th percentile in fastball run value with a 92 mile an hour four seamer.
Yeah. Yes. Correct.
So, like, it's
that is the thing. That is the thing to be wondering about. Just be clear.
You know, makes me wonder.
So one thing I think I mentioned this in our, you know, hours and hours and hours long of previews before the season, I was basically verbally retweeting some things that I heard from, I believe it was Alex Fast of Pitcher List. It was one of the guys from Pitcher List. So it was either Nick Pollock or Alex Fast. I apologize. Which one is which? Probably Nick Pollock. I think he's currently still with Pitcher List. So I think it was probably him. And it was when Imanaga signed, and, you know, we were going through dynasty drafts and, you know, all this stuff, looking forward to the season. How do you gauge the value of someone that you've never seen before? And basically all we had on Imanaga was what he's done in Japan, right? Which he was really good. Not quite, you know, Yamamoto level, but very good. And then pitched against like the United States baseball team and the World Baseball Classic, things like that. Right. The biggest thing that jumped out, and this is why Nick was like, this is like a crazy contract to sign because he is like potentially way better than this immediately, is that he basically throws his 93 mile an hour fastball, whatever it is, at an angle that is like essentially like Josh Hader. Like, it's like a weird, it's a very, very strange,
that looks right, you know,
like,
yeah,
tunnel basically that he throws in. And I can try to pull up the exact number that, like, you know, the comparison point there, but basically he is a starting pitcher throwing, you know, starting pitcher stuff where people are just, they just can't really see like where his fastball is going. You know what I mean? And it's done most of the, like, he basically has no like numbers that represent like, oh, he has a nasty splitter or nasty, like everything's just been like, oh, his fastball is like 10 times better than everyone else's in the world. Yeah. And so to buy in on that is to buy in on that concept. Obviously, his split could get better as sweeper or whatever. But it has just been a, I'm throwing my fastball and Godspeed. And it has worked to a stunning degree. If I can try to find that specific number about like the arm angle or whatever, I will let you know. But I believe that's essentially the sales pitch here. And I think that Dodgers game he pitched in, he went four scoreless. I believe that was a rain
super bad game. Weather.
Wasn't that like when like there was like a weird storm in like Los Angeles?
No. It was in Chicago. Like
I forget if that was in Chicago.
It was weather delayed, and they thought they should cancel the game, but ended up playing it. Is our call? Yeah, it was. So he didn't pitch enough really to get like a full meaningful sample, but he didn't allow any runs or walks in the portion that he did pitch. So hard to argue with what happened.
Yeah,
it's.
Right. So I guess the question is here, and this is twofold, and it might be agreeing on the same thing. Do you think this is going to be an all-star, Shota Imanaga? Do you think he has possibly the best fastball in baseball? Because I think that's what it largely is saying if you believe in him as an all-star plus level guy.
He could make an all-star team this year just because it's a great enough start. Like, he's been great. He's been really, really great already and done enough by the all-star break. It's highly unlikely that the numbers look bad. I don't know that I buy it, though, after sort of looking. All right, so here's my analysis, and I am going to caveat just on the front end that at least some portion of this, hopefully not a lot, but I'm doing a comparison against Yamamoto because they both came from Japan at the same time, and this guy signed a much cheaper contract. And selfishly, I'm hoping that my guy that my team signed is actually better. So I'm definitely biased going into this. However, if you look at like what he's done so far, so I'm just looking at the game logs of the two guys. Yamamoto's made 5 starts because he had the Korea disaster, and Imanaga's made 4. And in the most recent one, this is like a pretty typical trend across all of them. So I'm picking a specific example, but generally we see this pattern across the board. So Yamamoto threw 99 pitches and there were 24 called strikes looking and 16 strikes swinging. So 40 out of 99 or some sort of strike in the zone that like the batter was not able to do anything with. And if we look at Imanaga, he threw 92 pitches, comparable number, 5 called strikes and 15 swinging strikes. Mm-hmm. So the percentages go way down and it's a lot more of like a soft contact type profile, which I don't want to say can't work. You know, you don't just have to strike everyone out. And I think that obviously like his, I think he sort of was like, you know, limit the home runs are going to be a problem, but he tries to like limit contact, not necessarily strike everybody out. I do think that if your main strength is the tunneling on your kind of slow fastball and the main comp to like, wow, look at this crazy fastball is Josh Hader, I'm concerned how it's going to look when you start going through the third time through the order more often, when you start facing teams for the second time, and basically when there's just like a larger sample on this and people get more used to seeing this. Like it just does seem like the type of profile and type of situation where you could be at your strongest early in your season, early in the career, when this is still much more of a novelty and it could wear off some down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and he's 30 now. So this theoretically should be the best time, you know, even if it's getting used to things, right? It should still be getting used. Like this should be the best we see, right? Like at least within the first couple of years. I will say also like, I gauge a lot of guys based on vibes and stuff. He has a really cool vibe on the mound because he's a really small dude, but he's just really exciting. Like he's like very like, he's very he shows his personality, right? Like, you know, I think a lot of these guys that come over, you know, it's sometimes they're just very stoic and then sometimes they're like, you know, holy crap, this guy is fun. Imanaga falls under the latter, you know, where it's just like he really, really enjoys being out there. He enjoys striking dudes out. You know, he struck out Ohtani, you know, when they pitched against, you know, when they played against each other. So I think that helps me like back him up a little bit more. But it really is. I think it's an interesting one to bring up. And the reason why I'm bringing these up is because some of these are going to be good and some of these are going to be bad, right? Like some of these guys are not going to make it. But Imanaga is a one trick pony right now. But his one trick is like, what single skill could you possibly have that is more beneficial to being a great baseball player than my fastball is better than everyone else's on the planet, you know? And so I think that is just a really fascinating projection from here on out. But I think if there's more to be done on the other stuff, then, you know, I think we're looking at easy all-star, even if he's just this one trick pony type. I think he's still pretty darn fun, you know, at minimum. So
contract for the Cubs.
Continue like, unless you have any more.
No, that's just a great contract that like,
oh yeah.
They have three banger team contract options. It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm fully in on that being just like a total steal. I don't care if it gets hurt. I don't, you know, whatever. I think that was a bargain and a half.
9.25 million this year. Pretty good. All right. I will go on to my third guy and we will get more negative. This probably would have been a guy where if we were doing this particular exercise last year, I don't remember the contours of his year perfectly, but I feel like he would have been mentioned. He definitely last year was sort of his breakout year where he burst onto the scene. This year has been, you know, a little less of that and, you know, worse than ever before. He is the star of the Colorado Rockies. I'm talking, of course, about Nolan Jones, who's so far this year is batting
164,
247, 288 slash line. He has a 535 OPS plus, 535 OPS, 43 OPS plus. He has hit one home run. He has 12 hits. He has negative 0.5 war, according to Baseball Reference. The defense has not been great either. Things are just not looking good across the board.
He throws hard, though.
Yeah. That still is true.
Does throw hard. You can't take that away from him. Yeah, that sucks, man. He has a 39.5% strikeout rate. He's Joey Gallo. he's just literally Joey Gallo. This is all Joey Gallo. So what is my take supposed to be? If I'm in, does that mean I think he's ass?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I guess it's kind of complicated. Like, the Rockies need an all-star of some kind. So he might make it even with a 54 OPS plus, but
who would, it has to be, is Ezekiel Tovar been good? Please tell me he's been good. He's been all right, right?
Probably
since his
not.
Contract?
Okay, good.
All right, he's been good. Thank God. He's been all right.
Yeah, he's the guy.
He has an 844 OPS.
The guy. Oh, right, man, having a year. Good for them. Gonna,
if he was not, yeah. Good. All right, good for them. Because Nolan Jones might not be it. Yeah, I don't think Nolan Jones is good. Everything last year, and I hate to like discount everything that happened a year ago, right? But like what he did a year ago was like, if you're going to get, like, I think I had the exact same argument from like the reverse, where it's like, with, you know, if you could pick any skill, this is the one you would have. If you could pick anything to like have a red flag, it's like the guy that had like a bizarrely great season on like a 400 BABIP that had no history of, you know, supporting anything close to that and like any kind of skills that he exhibited over the course of a full season, and still only maxed out at like being like, oh, that's a really good guy, you know. Like he peaked as a rookie, you know, and I hate to say that, but it's like I just don't see a universe where he gets back to that point. Maybe I think he has the I think the power is good enough, and he's like an athletic dude where he recovers a little bit. You know, he might have to play the Cody Bellinger game where he figures out kind of who he is, right? Because I think that's another comparable player. Cody started off so strong as like a, you know, this giant uppercut, you know, power swing, you know, and then had to still kind of figure it out now, I guess. But so I'm not saying he's like cooked like permanently, but I think if I had to guess, is he closer to 940 OPS or is he closer to 550 OPS? I think I might pick the 550 OPS.
Joking or exaggerating when you said 400 BABIP, and you weren't, you really weren't at all. It was a 401 BABIP. That's
no
factual.
that was like totally genuine. 401 BABIP with a 297 average.
That's,
in course
you rounded
so
down.
It's like, again, can you like line up a more devastating, like, oh man, I hope this guy breaks science because there's nothing about this that's going to make you feel really good. Other than the fact that he did it. And I'm someone that has gone on the record about this kind of mindset. I want to give people full credit for things they accomplish in a season, no matter how fluky or weird they are. Right. If someone pitches an entire year and has a 2 ERA, I don't care how many strikeouts they had. I'm giving them their flowers. Right. I genuinely, truly believe that you accomplish that over the course of an entire baseball season.
That's sick.
No
it's
one
so
can
hard
take that
do.
Away from
yeah.
you. However, if I'm projecting. Yeah. Now and into the future, I have to account for these things that suck and BABIP and things like, you know, strikeout rate are the things that are always going to matter in these contexts. And I'm just not, it just does not enthuse me at all. So yeah, I would say I'm out.
And to agree with you, I might be slightly less, like, I don't know if I would say the 940 or 550, like I'm that's a tough over under for me in terms of what I would expect going forward, but I don't think we're going to see the 950 again necessarily. He's actually, the swing and miss seems to be slightly down. It was really terrible last year. The strikeout percentage is the worst in baseball. Yeah. So like, there's just like a lot of red flags that you can point at and go, that's that red flag we were looking for.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I think that the home runs are going to come back. His barrel percentage is 4.9%, and last year it was 15.7%. I think that we can get that back to the double digits probably, which will make a whole lot of this look better. But it's ugly so far, and that was really all that was a clear bright spot for Colorado, it felt like, in 2023. So it's a sad one to have to profile and go, that fell apart. But I do feel we're obligated to do so.
So you don't want to watch Dakota Hudson, bitch.
I
don't
really
bitch,
ever. In 2018, when I first moved to St. Louis, I had a good run of seeing Dakota Hudson pitch a couple of times. And, you know, I think I'm set. I don't think I need to see that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you're good.
Yeah. If you had to bet on Nolan Jones having over or under... this is... Man, I am a mean person. If you had to bet on Nolan Jones having over or under 1.5 seasons of league average hitting the rest of his career, would you take the over or under? So that would be like a 750.
Well, I assume you want to use some sort of like plus thing so that we normalize out the Coors effect and like nerf whatever he puts up by some substantial matter.
Yeah. So league average, it has to account for Coors. So for him, it might be like closer to like 780.
You know what? I'm
going to
take the over on 1.5. I don't think I would take the over on 2.5, but on 1.5, I'm taking the over. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think it's fair. I think it's very fair. And I think both, you know, are reasonable. And I don't know where I think I'd probably lean under, but like, you know, I think this is a Joey Gallo career just without as much excitement, you know? You know, he has an ability to hit very big home runs. It's just not as exciting overall. And I don't think he's as good of a defender as Joey Gallo was at his peak. So, So that's just like, kind of sucky for Colorado. Hopefully we are proven wrong again. I would rather someone prove me wrong that I'm
definitely
calling trash than, you know, otherwise. So it's on a human level. So my guy, this is our last guy, right? Last of the six.
Last
or
guy.
Or did you have one more? Last guy. So this man leads baseball in slugging percentage. He is also dead last at his position in fielding. Account for those two things, and I will tell you he is a shortstop who is most known for his speed. Can you put the dots together on this one?
Like, no, probably not. Is that Ellie Dela Cruz? Ellie Dela Cruz?
Yeah, you got 30 chances.
Like, I don't know.
It is not Ellie, but it feels kind of in the same ballpark of what we're talking about. This guy has just somehow been a better hitter than, you know, because Ellie kind of started the season poorly. This guy has not started the season poorly, and he's been just torching the ball. It is National shortstop CJ Abrams, who leads baseball with a 700 slugging percentage. 700. He has a, what is this? Where's my notes here? 300, 355, 700 slash line. And he is also the worst shortstop in baseball.
What?
In or out?
I just like pulled up his Fangraphs page to verify all of what you said, and I'm now pulling up his baseball reference page to re-verify all of what you said, just because I need to process this a couple of times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, he
has a 409 xWOBA, which is 93rd percentile, so he's basically just like a step back
from the Otanis
of the world,
good.
You know? As far as
like a lot of this has happened because he was just destroying the Dodgers when the Dodgers and Nationals played earlier this week. Like he was the difference maker in a couple of their wins and hit at least one home run that I remember. I think it was multiple.
He's a pull hitter. You know what I mean? He's not. There's two notes I want to share before we get about your final kind of opinion.
Yeah, please
filibuster.
I got to think about this.
One was that last year, there was two particular things about last year that jumped out CJ Abrams. One, he was like, or I'll say three, because this is the easy one, is that he was also still not a good shortstop last year. I think he was generally improving, but it's not his like strong suit, right? So the fact that he's not pulled off the Bobby Witt, I'm magically good at shortstop, is probably a concern for his longevity at the position. However, he started the year very poorly last year. And rounded out into being like a fantasy freaking menace because he was just stealing bases. And notably, he was pulling the ball a lot, which really helped his batting numbers. Which was also interesting timing when his manager said, yeah, CJ should probably stop pulling the ball so much. Like there was like a public like thing from Davey Martinez about him being a little bothered by CJ Abrams pulling the ball, which
I don't know if I agree with that.
It's just like really funny. Yeah, it's really funny when you're like the best guy on your team or like most like highest profile slash like if there's anyone that's going to do stuff before Dylan Cruz and James Wood get there, it's CJ Abrams and he's rounding into form because he's crushing the ball to right field and being like, I'd like to see him take it to left a little bit, you know? So that was a thing. But he has basically continued the good parts of last year. Where when he is getting the barrel on the bat, it is flying to right field. And it has been, you know, 6 home runs for a guy who, you know, I don't know if he had, how many did he have in his like career before?
It's last year.
Yeah, you know, he had like 12 home runs in his minor league career. You know, he had 18 last year, you know, so he's already a third of the way there. He's also got 3 triples because he's also got, you know, like it's a crazy speed or like great speed and great athleticism. So there's some kind of data there as far as the interesting kind of things that CJ brings to the table and has brought to the table. Do you have any strong feel for Mr. CJ?
His pull percentage, I'm just echoing something you said with the numbers. In 2022 was 32.8%. In 2023 was 35.9%. So you can sort of see, that's a slight uptick. Maybe he's doing it more. And is up to 50% this year.
Yeah.
So he's just all in on just, this is how I'm going to hit the ball and do some damage. It's a lot on fastballs. Like it's on the pitch type. He's batting 400 and slugging 1,000 against fastballs, which I might not throw them to him. Yeah. Like
that's sick.
But I don't know. It's tough to like really like poke a hole here, right? Because he had the pedigree as a good prospect. I don't know if this power was ever really part of the equation, but that's not an un.
Yeah, it was kind of a projection
possible,
thing for him,
right? Yeah,
you know, because he was so talented. You know,
and it's not like he's small. He's super fast, but he's big enough, right? Like it's not like you watch him hit a home run and you're like, oh my god, how is this possible? Like he can hit them with authority and it sort of makes sense. Why can't he play shortstop at all? That's weird. He should be able to play the position.
And it was something that I thought was part of his kind of uptick last year. You would start seeing like good plays from him last year. It'd be like, oh, okay. Like, you know, like that's, it seems like it's going in the right direction here. Like, you know, it does seem valuable here. And for some reason, it's not, that part is stagnant. And I don't know if that's an early season thing or what the deal was. I know one thing, like, I forget who tweeted it. I'm sorry, you know, but like someone was like, whoever can ship him to Bobby Witt's defense guy turns this guy into like an immediate freak. You know what I mean? Because that was the Bobby Witt thing where Bobby Witt's hitting turnaround came at the exact same time as he became like, okay, right. I guess he's just great at shortstop instead of being bad. So he's one step away from that. I mean, even if he's just like good enough that we're confident he is a shortstop, I think that's good enough. You know what I mean? To say he is a real building block for the future. I mean, we might have already seen enough. You know what I mean? As far as if we're using building block, is just like, who is the guy the Nationals can count on?
I mean, I think
forward.
He was there. He was in that camp where it's like, oh, he's a good player, solid young player they should build around. But this is like actually the level where it's like plus contributor to a team. And like CJ Abrams certainly hitting like this, but even something close to this is like baseball player on a winning franchise, not just like a guy who you can start and like feel okay about. This is like a contributor to success. And I think that what's kind of nice about his situation is that the Nationals are obviously not going to be good. They might not be totally horrible, but like there's no reason to move him off the position. Like if he can survive out there and not burst into tears, like you should at least keep giving him reps to see if it can work out. And I don't think there's anyone who would really be like pushing him at shortstop specifically. So it's worth like just giving him the shot to see if that can come together. Because if he can do this while playing a respectable shortstop at all, it's not respectable at this current point, but if he's able to do that, then that's incredible, obviously, even if the power steps back like 50%. If he can hit like this pretty much anywhere on the diamond, it's fine. But that would be just, you know, the added equation if he can be an actual like middle of the diamond type of guy.
Right.
I think he would currently be right now the National League apparently has every good shortstop. Am I reading this right?
Yeah, JP Crawford's bad now.
This is just NL only. Or Bobby Witt, you know, just good at baseball. So I was reading the wrong list. But in the National League, you know, Mookie is going to be shortstop, all-star, lock it in, because he's Mookie Betts. Ellie seems to be coming on strong enough where he's going to be in the mix one way or another. But do you think CJ Abrams will make the all-star team this year? And how would you gauge your excitement for his future?
I would have said it was a lock until I went to the Nationals page and I saw Jesse Winker is hitting 339. Mm-hmm. What? What are you doing, Jesse?
like we definitely could have brought him 30. Up. Like, hey,
there's potential here. Wow. What the? I think he'll make.
Please
talk about Jesse Winker. Please, God.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to do the pit stop for Jesse Winker. So I mentioned CJ Abrams was like, you know, last in defense or whatever. I think Jesse Winker has 2 outfield assists this year. He's playing left field. He's not DHing. And I think he's been like, obviously he's like a statue, but I think he's
good for him.
2 guys. So he's having like a Jeff Francoeur outfield season. At hitting like, you know, with like a 460 on base percentage, I think it is. Yeah, that
really
one I
thought
don't
his
believe,
major league career was over.
Yeah.
I mean, CJ Abrams is going to be an all-star.
I'm stunned by this one.
Probably this year, right? Like, he's going to be good enough to make the team this year and deserves it as, like, an exciting, still super, super young player. Like, he was drafted in 2019, but he's still only 23 years old. Like, he's definitely should still have upside left in his career. And if this is what it looks like, that's very exciting. So I would take the over on 1.5 all-star appearances for CJ, no question.
Yeah. And I think the thing with CJ, and I'd use the same thing that I said for Reed Detmers, is that he was someone thrown very quickly, very little experience into like a real starting role. You know, he came up with the Padres because he was caught up in that 2020 nonsense too, where it's like his formative minor league year where we'd have been like, all right, this is the make or break year, like not make or break, but like this is like, okay, the ascent of CJ Abrams would have been 2020, and then he just did not get to play baseball, right? So he comes out of 2020 with basically no experience, but he's still a top 5-10 prospect. And makes his major league debut in 2022, you know, and so it was just a very quick turnaround for him, you know, that he probably deserved more time to kind of have to develop and stuff. But the reason why I've been on him so much since the middle of last year is because he seems to be learning all this stuff. And I think he's shown enough at the plate for me to think he can do the same on defense. But even if he has to be like second base, you know, I think you still take everything he offers offensively for sure. So I would say he's more than likely going to be, especially because they have very little other guys that are going to steal a spot from him, but a all-star rep this year. But I would also be bullish on like multiple all-stars in the future. Like, even if he's not like the best player on the team, I think he could be like Ozzy, you know, has been for the Braves, where it's like, you know, he might not be like the reason you are winning every single game, but like you are.
Yeah, for sure.
Happy to have him around. You know what I mean? Especially when it's like that profile, but like in a more exciting speed power context. You know what I mean? So big ups to CJ. Big fan of his game. Hopefully he just keeps getting better. That is all the names. And I think that's all we got for now. I think we were worried we were going to have enough.
We did.
And lo and behold, we got solidly at like 90 minutes or something like that. So we're really good at this, and aiming low only served us well here. But Ryan, thank you for dropping in today. Is there anything you'd like to pitch as far as the Substack or anything else going on in your life?
The Substack, we got a little bit of lull in post coming up because there's not many trades made in late April, but the NFL draft right around the corner, lots of draft trades. And then in July, we've got the whole trade deadline season.
Oh, yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, we'll have you back on for, I think we'll definitely have you on, you know, if we don't have more of these kind of random discussions, we'll definitely get more into the Substack stuff. Cause I'm sure we'll have lots of good stuff, you know, as the summer kind of hits, on that end. So make sure you follow him there. Rain Delay Radio is produced by Lewis. I, Dylan, hosted this week's episode, and we were joined by our guest Ryan of Trades 10 Years Later. Rain Delay Radio is edited by Naim, and our theme music was composed by Chuck Leese. Rain Delay Radio releases every Monday morning at 1 a.m., and we will catch you next week. Bye.
Dylan's internet has gone down. He has just texted me, so I assume this is going to get edited out, but if not, I can just vamp, you know, talking about the various players. We're talking about the Marlins. They got a lot of names of former prospects who suck. Vidal Brujan, really bad player, as it turns out. Otto Lopez, former Blue Jay. Oh, really dreadful. Really dreadful. You could just go down the list, except for Nick Gordon. It turns out Nick Gordon is good. Second best hitter on the Marlins, which is a 109 OPS plus and just nothing remarkable across the board. But, you know, not striking out too much. You know who is striking out too much is Jazz Chisholm with 25 strikeouts in 21 games. That's really bad. And not really doing anything else. I guess 4 stolen bases is pretty good for this time of year. But, whew, talk about all hype and no substance. Am I right, Jazz Chisholm? Jesus Luzardo. Oh, there I'm we back. Go. I've just been monologuing ever since I figured out you dropped. I assume it's going to get edited.
Hell yeah. How is your monologue?
Really not good. Not good.
I'm glad you tried.